Listen to shoot the defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX, brought to you by PitchDMM, the app that lets fans rate their own team's performance. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-hosts this evening are Yannickis J and the man behind the superb football talk show, Footy Says, Ranty. Yann, welcome back to the show, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm usually good Monday to Friday, then United play on Saturday, and then I'm not. But
Man United ruined my weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to change my status on Twitter and Facebook. That's a new one now.
That's the name of your autobiography. In fact, that should be put on your headstone when you die. Man United ruined my weekend.
Yeah, people might read it as well. It's going to be a classic.
2015 onwards, right? Yeah. Bloody hell. Yeah, so, Ranty, welcome to the show, mate. Great to have you on. Sorry for that bit of a shitty introduction. Yann's headstone kind of thing got me out of thinking about it. Anyway, sorry, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm well, man. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to the show.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, mate. Before we start, Geez, I know, you know, people are probably tuning in to listen to you more than us, but tell us more about your podcast or your show that I was on the other day.
Where to begin?
From the beginning.
I mean, we've been around since 2011. Not many people know that, but we lost a lot of followers in 2016 due to the Twitter police. But yeah, we resurrected, if you want to call it that. We're back on the Twitter platform. We talk football in a barbershop. We occasionally do go out to games as well, and outside stadiums, and try and talk to fans at games as well. It's just about interaction and banter, really. You can follow us at @footy_says on Twitter. We're FS Uncut on Instagram, and we've got a YouTube account which you could subscribe to. You can catch all the latest barbershop football discussions there as well. And yeah, if you ever feel interested and want to join the debate and the discussion, just contact us and we'll be sure to get you involved. Mm.
Well, I tell you what, when you told me that the show was going to be recorded at a barber shop, the first thing I thought was, well, I haven't got much hair, so I'm not going to be much use there. But at the same time, you know, I love the format. I love the way that, you know, you guys run things. And to be fair, it's probably the most hospitable place, or one of the most hospitable places I've ever been. Everyone there was friendly, polite, from the get-go. It wasn't just like me walking in and, you know, having to get to know them. It's almost as if I'd known them for a long time. As I said, there's a top set of lads there, and I hope your show goes from strength to strength, because you've got some big numbers on YouTube, and I hope you get your followers back.
If I got invited, would I get a free haircut?
No, you wouldn't.
No, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you. And yeah, you're definitely right. The boys are a top set of lads. They're always willing to interact with fans from different backgrounds, fans of different teams as well. That's what it's about, essentially. It's just about getting opinions from fans within the community. And hopefully that continues.
Ranty, I watched it for the first time. And you had Sterling as well. I thought it was a brilliant show, mate. So good on you. Whatever you lot doing.
Thank you very much.
Good work. I thought it was brilliant.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
And Yann isn't easily pleased. So
no, I'm not.
That's a compliment of the highest order.
Absolutely. Compliments where they're due.
There you go. Excellent. Well, in case you guys aren't aware, Mr. Rodri Giggs isn't here at the moment. He's probably queuing up for fish and chips, pie and chips. Chips and curry, or maybe he's at a Tesco Express again.
Chips and gravy.
Chips and what accent was that?
God knows.
What was that? Please tell me what that was. Say gravy again in that accent.
Gravy.
Now, anyone that's listening, can you guess what accent that is? Or anyone that's from that part of the world that Yann tried to. Randy's thinking, what have I done? Why am I here? Right, okay. Let's talk football now. As you're all aware, we had a week off thanks to the god-awful international break. I, along with millions of others, are relieved and thankful the Premier League has returned. Okay, it was hardly a 20-year hiatus like the Spice Girls, but all that matters is that we have proper football. None of this, the Dutch are back because they drew against a regressing German national team. I mean, does anyone remember when the Dutch were ever here? I think, what, 1988? Jan, I mentioned the Spice Girls just moments ago. City are playing scintillating football, ripping teams to shreds whenever they want. I think you can say their stylish brand is posh, although I guess that's the only thing they have in common with Victoria Beckham. City are highly talented, for one. Guardiola went full OCD after City beat up West Ham 4-0, saying his team weren't at their best. They had too many touches of the ball and their passing wasn't good enough. Does Pep get enough credit for what he's done for City? I mean, his attention to detail is really something else.
I don't think he does, in a sense of, you know, everybody else who's probably jealous of what City have achieved. It's all about, well, yeah, if you spend £400-500 million, you're going to get a team to play how you want them to be. But as you know, you can buy players and they don't work out. And, you know, you can buy really bad players and all of a sudden, you know, you've got egg on your face. The fact that most of his signings, or probably all of his signings, really, apart from maybe Bravo that I can think of, that was a disaster, have all been successful and they all play, you know, to his philosophy. You know, you can tell that he loves his players, he trusts his players, and the players reflect that on the pitch. And to be honest, as a United fan watching them, it breaks my heart to see what kind of football they play and how easily they're beating teams. You know, the 3-0 lap after half an hour in most games and the game is practically over, where, you know, you look at us, for instance, and, you know, we can't score a goal against Crystal Palace. And, you know, the gulf of class between City and United and probably the rest as well. I mean, you know, we know Liverpool are trying to, you know, catch them and, you know, they're doing quite well at the moment as well. But City are miles ahead of everybody else.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting you say that, because I honestly believe it's a two-horse race for the title this season.
Yeah, I agree, but can Liverpool sustain it for a full season? Have, you know, is the squad as strong to compete with City? I'm not 100% sure. I mean, you've got to give Liverpool, I can't believe this, give City Liverpool credit. I might as well get shot now, but, you know, you've got to give them credit as well for their best start to a season for a while. They're playing attacking great football. Again, you know, following their manager's philosophy, Klopp's, you know, they're playing Klopp's style of football and it's enjoyable to watch as well. And I just think overall City will have more than Liverpool. I could be wrong, but I think City will win it again.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting you mentioned Liverpool and their superb form. I was listening to the All Commentators Are Geeks podcast with Sam Matterface, another fantastic podcast, All Football Commentators Are Geeks. And it was a couple of weeks back, and he was saying that he spoke to Jurgen Klopp. I can't remember which game it was, but this is there or thereabouts what he said to him. It was like, you know, with Man City doing well, you riding on their coattails, how difficult is it to maintain a challenge? And Jurgen Klopp was very spiky with his response, saying something along the lines of, you know, what do you expect me to say to my players? Oh, yeah, you know, let's chase City as far as we can. No, we just got to win every game we've got in front of us. That's all it is. Take every game as it comes. You can't look at what the opponents are doing, because if City win, it's going to deflate my team. So it's all about, you know, keeping them as motivated as possible. And I think the way that Liverpool are at the moment, you know, winning games and winning convincingly, which they did at the weekend, you can't rule them out at all. I don't care what stage of the season you're at the moment. They're looking like the real deal. But staying on City, Rantley, they killed the game in under 20 minutes, going 3-0 up, thanks to some really, really terrible West Ham defending. When you see the nature of the opening three goals, it's practically almost as if West Ham's defenders were in awe of City. Do you think teams are simply too scared of Pep's men?
I can see why you say that. I think during the course of this season, I think I've only seen Manchester City troubled once, and that was in the Champions League against Lyon. But if you're talking about the Premier League, I'm inclined to agree with Jan. They're just miles ahead of every other team. Sorry, did I get it right, Jan?
Yeah, that's right, mate.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've
heard worse.
I've called him worse.
Yeah, he just has them set up to attack, maintain possession. They know how to break. They know how to counter. They know how to keep ball. The interchange between some of the midfield players is sensational. I know Bernardo Silva is a player who didn't play in the weekend against West Ham, but he's a player that I really, really like. And I think once Silva eventually goes, I don't think Manchester City are going to have a problem in that creative area at all. It's tough because when I look at the rest of the teams and the chasing pack, you would argue that probably Liverpool are the closest that can come to maybe putting a chink in their armour. But we saw them at Anfield. It was a tight game. They almost nicked at the end, apart from Mauro's sky and his penalty over the bar. But I can't really see a team troubling Manchester City in the Premier League as it stands. But as you know, this is the Premier League and we've seen stranger things happen. So I wouldn't say that teams are scared. I wouldn't say teams are scared of City, but I would definitely say there's a lot of respect for them, given the success that they had last season and the improvements that they've made this season.
Yeah, it's almost as if they can blitz teams as and when they want.
Still, just very quickly on my point, the reason why I think City will win it, they're doing all this without Kevin De Bruyne as well.
I don't even feel like, even with a fit Kevin De Bruyne, I can't see him getting back in the team. Honestly, can't. Bernardo Silva's been excellent this season. He's been excellent, and Silva, who does Kevin De Bruyne come in for?
Probably, I don't know.
Sane's
been on form lately, hasn't he?
Sane's been on form. Sterling's been on form. Bernardo Silva's been superb. David Silva can't stop scoring. It's tight. It's really, really tight.
What I was trying to say, Ranty, is the fact that Kevin De Bruyne is one of their world-class players and he's been out for 3, 4, 5 months. They haven't missed him. Whilst if Liverpool...
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah, if Liverpool lost Salah, say, for like 3 months or Virgil van Dijk, I think you'll see the difference with them two in the Liverpool team, whilst you don't see the difference with De Bruyne not playing.
That's a fair point. It's definitely a fair point.
And also, don't forget with City, if John Stones or Laporte get injured, they've always got Otamendi or Kompany to come in.
Yeah.
That's the thing. With Liverpool, Van Dijk, he's been the glue that's held that team together. I mean, to be fair, you know, I wasn't one of those people that questioned the price tag when they brought him in because, you know, it's an overinflated market anyway, and you get what you pay for these days, to be fair, unless you're Jose Mourinho. But it just seems that, you know, without Van Dijk, Liverpool are much weaker. They're not as stable as you'd expect them to be. And defensively, they have to rely on Dejan Lovren, who's probably one of the best defenders in the world at the moment, apparently.
According to who? Lovren himself?
There you go. But hey, he appeared on Copper 90, so he must be a superstar, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway. Right, West Ham's defending wasn't as comical as Mel B's relationship history or David Luiz's attempt to stop Son breaking through to grab Tottenham's third. Rodri isn't here, so I'm going to pose this question to you, Jan. Spurs booty.
Well, this
year. Iris? Oh, hello.
Yeah, you okay?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thanks. Sorry, I, you know what? I started with my son's birthday this week, so I got him a battery powered car spot. You know what? I start putting it together. Well, it's like the trypsin fat, so I thought it'd take me 10 minutes. Next minute, I looked up, it's quarter to 10. I'm not sure.
And there was me thinking that you got that Scalextric set I sent you.
No, mate, you said that it was at Tesco or something.
Yeah, I thought you was at Tesco Express.
Yeah.
No, I was Smith's.
Ah, nice, excellent. Rodri, this is Ranty. Ranty's the head honcho of footy, says.
Yeah, you okay?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate, thanks.
There you go. Good. Right on time. Right on time, Rodri. Tell me, Chelsea, they were kicked into touch, or should I say Spurs booted sorry ball into Canal, and that basically ended Chelsea's unbeaten run. We've been saying for a while that a central defensive pairing of Luiz and Rudiger won't win Chelsea the title. They're not proving us wrong, are they, mate?
No, they're not. But, you know, even though there was a few mistakes by Chelsea, obviously quite blatant by David Luiz, especially with the third, he's embarrassing, to be honest. But, yeah, I think playing Tottenham at their own game, I think Tottenham showed their 2 or 3 years on from, you know, playing with each other, knowing the system. And Chelsea are still learning the system, and I think they come up against a better organised team and an ultimately better team on the day. And the players they've got, you know, with Dele Alli and Kane and Eriksen, and, you know, they've got top players on the day. And on the day they can do that, and Chelsea, you know, I agree we could have had a penalty, definitely could have had one. The first one was I don't know what that Martin Axel was doing, it was a penalty all day long. The second one was arguable. But yeah, Tottenham deserve winners, and you know, it just proves what everyone was saying. If Chelsea will not win a league if they play a back four with David Luiz in it, it's just simple. Mm. And I just showed you that. The big teams, against the better teams, you just can't do that. And Son running ragged and making look like a fool, to be honest.
Do you know what? It's just dawned on me. This isn't the first time David Luiz has pulled out of a challenge this season. Remember, he did it against United with Mata. That's the second time he's done it. So do you think that there's a chance Sarri has said, you know, don't go in like a bull in a china shop? Because this isn't the David Luiz that I remember. The David Luiz I remember was this clumsy central defender that always dived into challenges and was physical when, you know, got Rafael sent off and blinked at the camera or winked at the camera like a Sideshow Bob would do. But do you think someone's had a word with him and told him to be more calmer, but it's kind of affected his game? Does that make sense?
Possibly, but you know, he's still going to have them traits, and it's instinct with him. You know, there's a mistake in him, and every manager who come up against him will tell the players that if they put pressure on him or, you know, put him under pressure, there's a mistake in him, and he'll give you something, which he ultimately did on Saturday.
I read somewhere today that David Luiz has cost Chelsea 67% of their goals this season. That they've conceded.
Wow.
That is mad. But it's not surprising.
But no, I'm not surprised. I thought it would have been more than that, to be fair. But yeah.
What's happened to Christensen and Cahill? Are they injured?
No, they're just out of favour.
Cahill's a write-off by the looks of it. And Christensen, I don't know what's going on with Christensen, to be honest. He looked good in spells last season, but...
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. They've still only lost one game this season. You know, they're not doing too bad.
Well, yeah, no, you're true. Yeah, I just think, on Saturday, Spurs definitely exposed the flaws that hadn't been exposed this season. Like you guys said, I think Rudiger and Luiz are not going to win you the league, unfortunately. And I think that's a bit harsh on Rudiger, who I think has been okay for Chelsea this season, but they were absolutely getting drawn out of position time after time after time, and they weren't learning from their mistakes, and it cost them. I think Jorginho as well, playing in the deeper role that he did against a very attacking side, backfired for Sarri. So I think that's on Sarri. And Spurs, for the first time, had played Eriksen, Son, Ali and Kane in the same starting lineup this season, and that obviously worked well for us. So obviously for us it was definitely a plus, but I think there's things that need to be rectified on Sarri's part that he will probably learn from. I don't know if he's going to continue to play Kante where he's playing him. That just didn't work out at all. It just literally didn't work out at all, because all we were doing is, as soon as Jorginho tried to pick up the ball from deep, Ali was straight on him, constantly straight on him. They couldn't gain possession of the ball. Even when they did, they couldn't do anything with it. Apart from the penalty shouts, we would have deserved winners.
Mm. Well,
I think it proves where Chelsea are at. You know, the other team below the top six teams, they'll blow them away, but it proves that, you know, they played Arsenal at the start of the season. All right, they won, but Arsenal could have easily won. I think if they play Arsenal now, they get beat. United should have beat them, and Tottenham have exposed them. So I think against the top six, that's where they'll come stuck. Because you know, they just haven't got the qualities at the back, and the top six will expose them. But the other teams, I think they'll just blow them away. But, you know, he's only been there 2 or 3 months, so I'm sure they'll be stronger. But for challenging for the title, no, I think it's City and Liverpool all the way.
Sorry, Bull is here, ladies and gents, bottling it. There you are. Anyway.
I wouldn't be surprised if Koulibaly signs for Chelsea next season.
No. Yeah, that would be a decent signing. Yeah, a well-needed signing for a team like Chelsea as well.
Mm. There's a lot of teams. There's a lot of Arsenal, United, Chelsea. They're all looking for top centre-half. So.
Well, not United. They want to sign Smalling to a new contract.
Who?
Smalling.
Stop it, Stel. Come on. Yeah.
Randy, you're a Spurs fan, obviously. Let's be honest, mate. Had it not been for Kepa's heroics, Spurs would have been out of sight in the first half. But apparently, you haven't been playing well this season. I'm not sure entirely which idiot believes that. What pleased you most about the performance?
I'll be honest with you. It was probably our best performance of the season. A lot of people know, probably think I'm a Spurs pessimist, but I think a lot of Spurs fans will tell you that a lot of the results we've managed to get 3 points from this season, we scraped. We haven't played particularly good football this season, and I think that's because of not only the fact that a lot of our players played in the World Cup, but we've also had to change the system a bit to suit other players who have joined the first team, such as Lucas Moura, which has meant Harry Kane is, you know, being deployed a lot deeper than he would, even though that wasn't the case on Saturday. But I think what impressed me the most on Saturday was how we pressed Chelsea. This season we haven't been as aggressive as we have in previous seasons under Poch. But yesterday, Saturday, I think we had a few players rested, a few players prepared for that game, and it made such a huge difference. The movement was fluent. Every player knew what they were doing. Sissoko's had ounces of stick from Spurs fan in the last few weeks. He's played for us. He's been superb. He's provided energy for us in the midfield. He's covered the fullbacks well. He's been an attacking outlet for us as well. So he knows his job in the team. He's not as technically gifted as Dembele, that goes without saying. But what he does do, he does provide you that presence that you need in the midfield. Obviously, the balance with Dier has helped as well. But I think with the game on Saturday, I was just so impressed with our aggression in the game. We did not allow Chelsea any time or space on the ball, and that was from when they were passing it from the back to when it reached their midfield. Hazard hardly had a sniff. I think he had the two chances where he went down. Obviously, one of them was definitely a penalty, I would say. But apart from that, he did nothing in that game. Morata was in for his pocket for the whole game. He had to go off. Kane's movement was superb. He was dragging Luiz left, right and centre. He's dragging Rudiger left, right and centre. Son was probably man of the match for me. I thought he had a superb game. He knew his role in the team as well. So yeah, for me, as a collective, I was really impressed with our aggression in that team. The high press worked really, really well.
Great stuff. Fantastic. Right, Everton's win against Cardiff was the kind of lucky goal Jan usually gets on FIFA games, while Eddie Howe's Bournemouth lost their third on the bounce. There were big wins for Huddersfield at Wolves and Fulham, who beat Southampton 3-2 in a thrilling game at Craven Cottage. That was almost a tongue twister there. Jan, Fulham blinked first, sacking their manager before January, and Ranieri's first match in charge ended in victory. It wasn't for the faint-hearted, though. Fulham rode their luck at the end. But what will that win do for them, and where does this leave Southampton and Leslie Hughes?
Well, first of all, it was a great win for Fulham. They needed that, you know, a team coming up from the Championship, they haven't started great, as we all know. And, you know, it was the new manager syndrome again, and he's come in. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Ranieri looks a little bit more ruthless this time. He seems a little bit more aggressive. You know, he was always, you know, the nice guy. But in his interviews, you know, he seems like he's a lot more ruthless. So that's good to see, because Fulham, Fulham need that if we're going to stay up. They're still shipping in goals. I mean, you know, they've shipped in another two, but at least they've got the 3 points, which was the most important. As for Southampton, they're in 3-4 at the moment. I mean, but then again, they've got United at the weekend, so they'll probably get a result. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Hughes turns it around against us. You know, they usually raise the game when United come into town, but I think Hughes is probably the next manager to go. I haven't seen anything of Hughes as a manager for the last, four, five, 6 years, really. I don't know what he's achieved anywhere he's gone. And it seems like his methods are getting a bit boring. And, you know, it's the same kind of thing wherever he goes. And I think Southampton will be looking for a new manager soon.
I agree, mate. Rod, Ranieri said Mitrovic is one of the best goal scorers in Europe. I'm not sure he genuinely believes that, but Fulham desperately need the Serb to find the back of the net more often if they are to stay up. Ranieri's comments will really help Mitrovic's confidence, though, won't they?
Yeah, they will, mate. Well, I remember I was watching Match of the Day on Saturday, and my mate who was watching it with saying Mitrovic is... he's one of the best strikers in the world. He nearly fell off my chair when he said it. But, if you give that a guy like that confidence, and you know, you can see what he can do. Obviously, he hasn't had a great start to the season, but we've seen what he did at the end of last season for him. And there's no reason why he can't do that in the Premier League. We've seen it before. And if you pump someone like that full of confidence, you see the rewards on Saturday, because it was great finishing. Really should have had an hat trick, but yeah. If he continues to do that, then Fulham have got a chance.
He's a handful, though, Mitrovic.
Yeah, he is a handful. Yeah,
yeah.
And he's got a good first touch, so
we got one.
It's great goals as well.
Yep.
Yep. There you go.
And Fulham need to stay up. They need a bit of fight, and he's definitely got that.
Yeah, they need players around him, because you know the ball sticks with him, and plus he can score goals. So yeah. Yeah. They just need to keep him fit and get people around him, and you know, with him in the team, they've got a chance.
They've got a decent front four, haven't they? They've got Sessegnon, Sherla, Mitrovic, and they've got Kearney as well, which it's not too bad.
Yeah, the thing is, I remember in the press conference, Ranieri said something along the lines of they're going to be focusing on their defensive side because they're shipping in too many goals. And
yeah,
it goes back to what I said beginning of the season or the first couple of games when, you know, Jokanović was constantly changing the back line. And I said, you know, they need a settled back four. I wonder if Ranieri knows his best back four. I know he's only been there a couple of weeks, but I wonder if he's going to stick with what he's got. I know they conceded two at the weekend. They're lucky, to be fair. What do you guys think?
It needs time, doesn't it? You know, he's a new manager coming in. You know, Fulham have got a lot of defenders there, so he's got to assess them at training. And once he picks the team, if the defenders he picks has good games, then as you know, as a defender, continuity is important and consistency. So, listen, he's an Italian manager, you know. He thrives on defending. And I think Fulham will be all right under Ranieri. I really do. I think he'll keep him up.
Fair enough. Rantley, Wolves were unfortunate not to come away with all 3 points against Arsenal the other week. They were completely the opposite yesterday. That being said, Huddersfield were well worth the win. That's 2 victories in 3 for the Terriers. 7 points from a possible 9. Has the fight back begun?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that. The last three games have seen them take points from teams in and around them. I think what I was probably most impressed with them. What impressed me about them the most on Sunday was probably the way they dominated the midfield. Aaron Moy is a player I rate. I think he's like very, very good for Huddersfield. I think the midfield that he played in enabled him to be a lot more creative than he would usually be. Billing is another player who provides a lot of energy for them, and I don't think Wolves were able to handle that with the two in the midfield. I think Moutinho and Neves and if you guys disagree with me, please do let me know. I think Moutinho and Neves, they prefer to be a lot more on the ball than they do off it. Neves is notorious for conceding a lot of fouls for Wolves. He was notorious for that in the Championship level, and I think that was something that Wagner probably picked up on in that game against Wolves. Completely packed the midfield. They had Pritchard as well, who made it a four sometimes, and I think the dominance in the midfield helped them get the points that they needed for that game. Can they go on and continue this fine run of form? That remains to be seen for me. They've got a few hard games coming up. I think Bournemouth away is going to be difficult for them. Then they've got Arsenal, and then they've got Newcastle as well, and Southampton after that. So, I mean, you could argue that there are points that they can pick up there, but I'm not too sure, given the sort of form that they've been in throughout the course of the season. But if we're looking at the last three games, then, yeah, things are definitely looking up for them. But I just don't think they have enough to be comfortably out of that relegation zone.
Fair enough. I don't know if you guys know this, but only one team in the top 10 wear stripes. The rest wear stripes are in the bottom 10.
Yeah.
Southampton, Palace, Newcastle, Huddersfield. There you go. See? It's only Bournemouth that are in the top 10 that wear stripes. See? Moral of the story is don't wear stripes. It's that simple. Look at Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday, bless them. Jan, does this sound familiar? Player shoots, goalkeeper parries it straight to the path of an unmarked player who taps it in.
Yeah, go on.
Everton are winning games with sweaty goals like you, mate.
Yeah.
All right, let's not make any bones about it. Marcus Silva is really assembling a decent side, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing a brand of football that the Evertonians kind of wanted, you know. I mean, after Allardyce, where, you know, all we heard from the Evertonians was just moaning because they like the brand of football. They wanted Marcus Silva and come in and, to be fair to him, his signings have been good and they've worked out. I mean, you know, Digne, Gomez, Richarlison has been a revelation since he's been there. And it seems that he's got everybody on board. And they're playing attacking football. They're not conceding a lot as well. And he's got a good balance there. And Everton have got a few bob to spend as well. And if he gets them into Europe this season, I think that would be a brilliant achievement for his first season there.
So tell me something. When you look at the squad that they have at the moment,
yep,
where do you think they need to improve if they are to at least challenge for a top four spot? I know it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, there are so many teams that are better off than Everton, but how far away are they when you look at the grand scheme of things? Because when I look at them defensively, they're not great. Let's be real.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that.
I think their midfield is half decent. You know,
yeah,
and I think
they need a striker.
Yeah,
they still need a striker, don't they? They don't really have a focal point in that team at the moment.
Lukaku's available if they want him back.
No. Well, I'll take Richarlison. I'll tell you that for now,
mate. I'll take Walcott ahead of Lukaku.
Oh,
I mean, that's
give up! Stop it! Stop it! The Despacito Lewis Hamilton. Stop it! Christ.
Calvert-Lewin.
Rod, what do you make of Everton, mate?
Yeah, they're looking good. Slowly but surely, getting solid at the back and scoring goals. And Signals and what's his name? I always get it wrong.
Sigurdsson.
Sigurdsson, yeah.
Well, we can call him Signarsson. I don't mind.
Yeah.
Sigurdsson,
I think that's what John Motson calls him as well. So
yeah.
He's proving how much of a top player he is, because, you know, he's one of the top number 10s in the league. And if he's not assisting, he's scoring goals. And, you know, he's on the highlight reels every week. And he's just a top player. And, yeah, they're definitely going places now with Richarlison as well and other players that have got there. Yeah, they're looking solid, and, you know, arguably, could finish six if you carry on playing the way they're playing.
Ratney, I'm sure you remember Sigurdsson from his time at Spurs. He was a decent player at Swansea. In fact, he was probably their most important player, to be fair. He was quite unlucky at Spurs, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was a difficult one when he was at Spurs, only because Eriksen was our creative player at the time, and there was hardly any room for him down in the hole. We used to try and play him on the left side, and obviously that was in the position that he quite liked, and eventually he ended up leaving. But for me, he's always been a quality player, technically gifted. He brings others into play. He creates well. He'll chip in a few goals as well. I remember one stunning goal he scored against Hull City. It was in the Carling Cup a few years back, where he's just absolutely taken, he's left the defender and he just banged it top corner. And those goals, they don't surprise me, because he has that in the locker. But I think he's at a team where he can blossom, and I think we're seeing that now at Everton. I mean, the price tag, as you said before, inflation is a big thing now in football. But I mean, if he's going to be their main player, if he's going to be their standout player, then you know they're going to buy him for that sort of price tag. And I think he, to some extent, he is living up to it. Yeah, it's unfortunate it didn't work out for him at Spurs. He's not better than Eriksen. He's definitely not better than Eriksen. Mm-hmm. We need to get on a new contract, mind you. But yeah, he's a brilliant player, and I think he'll do well at Everton.
Fair point. Rod, Cardiff City, they're really struggling at the moment. Their goal difference is minus 15. I think only Fulham is worse than theirs at the moment. Do you think Warnock, his head is on the chopping block? Do you think he could be one of the next bosses to go? Because we know that Hughes is in trouble. I'm not sure if Sean Dyche is going to be in any trouble after tonight. I know they're 2-1 down at the moment with a few minutes to go. Is Warnock next in line?
No, I don't think so. It'd be daft to get rid of him. He's had no money to spend. Who else are you going to bring in that's going to get them out of trouble? They need goals. They haven't got no one. If they haven't got a goal scorer, you're going to struggle, especially in the Premier League. And they always knew those were going to be up against it. Them and Huddersfield are going to find it very, very difficult, because they've just got no one. Even though Huddersfield had a good result on the weekend, but they're always going to find it, they're going to struggle, because they've got no one to score goals. So, I think it'd be a mistake to get rid of Warnock. He's doing the best he can with the tools he's got. And, like I say, they've not spent a lot of money, so no, I don't think they'll get rid of him. I think they're going to stick by him.
Well, Rantley said earlier that stranger things have happened in football. I mean, this is Cardiff City, whose chairman booed his own players off the pitch once, so...
Yeah, well, he's unpredictable, but, you know, he's got him in the Premier League without... I don't think they even dreamed of getting in the Premier League last year, and they did, and they stormed it in the end, and, you know,
Sorry to cut you off, mate. I don't know. With Warnock, it's a funny one, because I just get the impression that he's just happy to be back in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember,
yeah.
I don't know which post-match interview he gave or what match it was, but he just gave the impression that he was just happy to be there. He didn't care about the result too much. Just like, well, yeah, we're in the position that we're in. We don't have much money, so we'll just take each game as it comes. And I don't think... If you're a Cardiff City fan, definitely you're going to be a bit concerned, surely, because the aim is to stay up.
I think he's that experienced now, and he's been in the Premier League that many times, and you know he's always been up against it, and I think he's just enjoying the moment. And you know, it is a bit downhearted when he says, you know, you don't think we're always going to be a struggle, or you know, he's never upbeat. He's probably too honest, to be honest. When he's talking after games, but you know, you can't blame him for that. He's just being honest, and like I say, he's not been given the tools or at least a goal scorer to give him a chance. You know, they've still got a chance, but it's just not a better chance with a proven goal scorer. Like, you know, maybe in January go for someone like Jermaine Defoe. He's not been playing him for Bournemouth. Get him there for the end of the season. Someone like that. See if we can bring him in for the end of the season. Then they might have a chance, but if they don't get a goal scorer, then it's going to be a struggle for them.
So what you're basically saying is that Neil Warnock spent £2.50 on one line on the Euro Millions and won £3.
Yeah, exactly. And he's still not bought a wig.
Can you get wigs for £3 these days?
That hairline's getting higher and higher every year. Well,
he's got more hair than me then, so I can't really... Right, I think I might have to borrow some of Jan's hair. He's got more than me as well, even though it's grey.
Yeah.
Right.
It's grey anyway.
There you go. In other news, the second leg of the Copa Libertadores final was postponed for the second time after Boca Juniors made a formal presentation to CONMEBOL on Sunday requesting the match be replayed in conditions of equality. Here's what happened, pretty much in a nutshell. You might want to get your deck chairs out or read the book, I don't know. Now, according to reports, River Plate supporters ambushed the Boca team bus and police used pepper spray to disperse fans. Unfortunately, several players were badly affected by the pepper spray and were vomiting in the changing room. Boca's Juanchope Abia, Cardona, Tevez and Almendra were reportedly sick, while Chiara and Pablo Perez suffered cuts from broken glass. The latter was taken to hospital with glass in his eye. Now here's where it becomes even messier. CONMEBOL said the game would go ahead, but at 6 p.m. they flat out refused to postpone the game because of TV commitments. CONMEBOL then announced the game would kick off at 7:15 local time, and one of their doctors filed a report stating the injuries were superficial and there is no medical reason not to play the game. Now, Pablo Perez, you know, the bloke with glass in his eye, has reduced vision and there's a risk of infection. The CONMEBOL doctor, you know, the bloke that said the injuries were superficial, said the doctors at the stadium wouldn't have been able to make a real assessment. Turns out, he's a River fan. You couldn't make this shit up. Yesterday, River announced that the match would take place at 5 o'clock local time that day. However, CONMEBOL President Alejandro Dominguez later announced that the final would be rescheduled. A meeting is going to be held today between both clubs to rearrange the match. Now, gents, as far as clusterfucks go, this has to be one of the biggest in football history, is it not, Jan?
Definitely.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it, mate? I mean, apparently, what the River fans were doing, I think there was a cup game at Boca Juniors 3 years ago that the Boca fans attacked the River Plate players in the tunnel with gas. So it's kind of a revenge. But them two hate each other probably more than Rangers and Celtic and Olympiacos and Panathinaikos. I mean, the passion over there and the hatred is immense. And I don't see how this is going to turn out because, you know, River Plate obviously want to play the game at home. The second leg, they've got the advantage. But apparently, reading today, they're looking to move it to a neutral venue, which I guess is going to suit Boca. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of a decision they make tomorrow.
I think it's a shame because the first leg was very, very entertaining. Yeah. And listen, as far as football rivalries go, as you said, it doesn't get much heated. But Rantley, I mean, I've never seen anything like it before in my life. The thing is, forget the actual incident itself. The way it's been organised, this is utter shambles, isn't it?
No, definitely. 100%. I mean, there was a video going around that I saw today of, I think it was her mother actually hiding flares under her child's shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
To get into the stadium. It's complete lunacy, to be honest. And you've got fans fighting the police. It's so disorganized, and it's a shame because it's like one of the well-known rivalries in world football, and it's spoilt by you know, individuals, or I don't even want to say individuals, but by fans who feel that, you know, it's right to tear gas fans, tear gas players, and smash bus coaches and stuff like that. I mean, if I was in charge of it, I'll probably play it behind closed doors. But I don't know how that would fare in the long run. I don't know. I don't know whether that would be the right thing to do in terms of what they want to get from the fans and stuff. But yeah, it's been really, really disorganized. It's a shame, really, because it would have been a good game. River Plate definitely want to obviously show what they're capable of, and Boca Juniors obviously want to be fully equipped for that game as well, for it being a final. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out.
It's funny because even the Buenos Aires mayor, Horacio Rodriguez Larreta, said it was a revenge attack, as Jan said. And apparently the incident occurred the day after police raided the house of a leader of the Barra Brava, which is supposed to be the powerful, violent wing of River's hardcore supporters. And he's actually blaming the River Mafia, causing the River Mafia.
That's right.
Apparently, they confiscated 10 million pesos, which is about £200,000, and 300 tickets for the final. So, yeah, it's proper naughty, as Danny Dyer would say, you know. Rod.
I'll tell you what, though, Stow, can you imagine Boca do actually win it now in River Plate's stadium? They're not going to come out alive, are they?
No.
See, that's the thing. That's why I would think it would probably be the safest option, would probably be playing it behind closed doors. Because if you're going to get a case with what we got on the weekend, then...
I don't think they'll play it behind closed doors. I think they might play it in a neutral venue, with River Plate maybe having the majority of the fans because they lost the advantage. It's going to be a difficult one because, like I said, River Plate are going to want the advantage somehow because they played away in the first leg. They're going to feel, they're going to want the advantage, aren't they, somehow? So
I just feel like it's going to be a war zone either way.
Do you know what? Apparently, Genoa, the local authority, have actually written to both clubs. They've offered to host the game because there's a link between the city and both clubs. Because apparently Boca Juniors are nicknamed the Genizes, which means Genoese, and it's the local dialect. And River Plate apparently have adopted the red and white kit based on Genoa's colours, because it's the same colours as Genoa's flag. Yeah. So they're kind of acting like the middlemen, so to speak, and say, look, we'll host this game, but hosting a Copa Libertadores final in Italy, it smacks of, we can host Premier League games abroad now.
Yeah.
Rod, what do you make of the whole thing? Is Rod gone?
Rod? Yeah, it's a bit of a shambles, to be honest. Sorry, I had it on mute. I hear Jan saying, they're taking away the advantage. The advantage should be taken away from him. This happened when the shoe was on the other foot, and didn't Boca get disqualified and River end up winning it? So, that's not going to happen this time, but the advantage should be taken away. It's a shambles. That shouldn't happen. And, like you said, if it does stay at River Plate, and Boca did win, someone would definitely be strung up, and probably Carlos Tevez. But there'd be definitely problems, though. Joking aside, there would be definitely serious issues there if Boca won in River Plate. So it'd have to be taken away from the advantages. Has to be taken away because of what happened.
I think it's a shame because weren't River Plate relegated a few seasons ago?
Was it 9 years ago?
Has it been that long already?
Yeah, I could be wrong, but they went down for the first time in their history.
Wow, it feels like only a few seasons ago, to be fair.
You might be right. I think I read somewhere that it was 9, but I could be wrong still.
Oh, dear. Yeah, but even still, I mean, for them to get relegated and come up and get to a final, which, let's be honest, the World Club Tournament happening middle of December, and they're talking about rearranging it to like 10 days before they're supposed to go to the UAE or Morocco, wherever the tournament is held. So they won't even know who's won the game until 10 days before the semi-final, which is bizarre.
It's a shambles, absolute shambles, in a game of that magnitude as well. I've been looking forward to this final as well, and do you think it'll be played? I mean,
they have to play it. They have to.
I kept on switching BT2 on, and Paris Saint-Germain was on.
I think what's going to hold it up is where the game will actually be played. Obviously, the safety of the players is going to be a high priority for the organisers. So we don't know how long that's going to take. To be fair.
Jan, you were right. They were relegated in 2011. In fact, I think there was a pitch invasion and there was over 2,000 police officers deployed.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. It says here, police fired water cannons up to the stands.
When was it still? 2011. So 8 years. 7 years ago, yeah.
I mean, that just tells you all you have to do, all you need to know about it. It's bizarre. It's bizarre, you know.
The thing is as well, though, what does this do for the clubs going forward in Argentina now as well? As in, when they do meet in their respective league.
Well,
you know, I mean, we know it's hostile there anyway, but the fact of what's happened now in the final like that, and depending on the outcome, what would happen the next time the clubs meet as well, that's going to be interesting too.
True. Well, let's just hope Diego Maradona isn't about, because I'm sure he'd have a few things to say. But then again, given his recent interview to, was it ESPN, where they asked him about the
Mexican League.
They asked him about the standard of the Mexican League, and for the first 20 seconds he was just saying,
He's brilliant.
Too much of the coca. Right, Thierry Henry finally got his first win as Monaco head coach thanks to solitary Radamel Falcao goal against Cannes, while Santiago Solari's Solacticos were trounced 3-0 at Eibar. Real's rivals Atletico and Barcelona played at a 1-1 draw. And I believe Sevilla are now top of the league after winning at the weekend. So La Liga is becoming even more interesting. Randy, has Monaco's win released some pressure on the Arsenal legend? Is this the start of something good for them?
Nah. Definitely not. Since his arrival, they've been poor. If you compare it to his fellow countryman Patrick Vieira, they're not doing too badly. Nice, seventh in the table, but yeah, it's just been a horror show for Thierry Henry thus far at Monaco. I know he's renowned for his punditry, but you know, managing a team at that level is a whole different ball game. I think personally, he should have started at a bit of a lower level than AS Monaco, which would have been a big ask for him regardless, as he's finding out. Is he going to last the whole season? I'm still not sure. They currently have 10 points. They're 2 points away from the escaping the drop zone. He's still got time, but I just think the players that he has at his disposal are just not as good as the players that Jardim had when he was there. I know Falcao is renowned for his scoring, but he's just, you know, he's on the other side of 30 now, and he's not going to be able to keep up the same high intensity we knew him for at Atletico Madrid. He's going to have to make some shrewd signings in January. I think he's going to have to find a system that suits his players as well. They lost to Club Brugge. I think it was 4-0 in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I think it was 4-0. 4-0 in the Champions League. That was a complete embarrassment for Thierry Henry. A complete embarrassment. For now, he's just going to have to take each game as it comes. But I just don't think I think he's punching way above his weight at Monaco at the moment. I think the job's too much for him, and I don't think he's gonna last too long.
Joe, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny you say that, because the moment you started talking about Thierry Henry and an advert on the telly came on with him driving a Renault Clio, I'm thinking, is that him making his escape? Sorry, Jan, you were saying.
I think it's a bit harsh, to be honest. Monaco have been declined since they sell their best players every year and make a profit. They just need to recruit. I just think he needs to stabilise them and keep them up. I think that's the priority now for Henry this year. See what he's got, and hopefully, you know, for his sake, Monaco have got a few bob to spend next season, and he brings in the players, you know, he wants. That's not his team at the moment, so he's just gone in there to try and clear up Jardim's mess that he left, to be honest. And you know, he needs time to get it right, like any other manager would.
It's just like Alan Shearer going to Newcastle, isn't it? Remember when he walked in the job? Relegation candidates, no financial backing, dealing with a group of players that weren't good enough to play at that level. He was in a win-win situation, you know? And Thierry Henry's come in, and I personally think his ego got the better of him this time, and he's been found out.
I mean, that's where I stand with it. I think obviously there's a whole love story behind him and Monaco being a ex Monaco player. I just feel like he got carried away with the whole situation, and he's finally snapped back to reality to some degree. I'm not saying that he's not in a position where, you know, he's kind of had to pick up from where Jardine left off. But if you look at the table currently, he's struggling. He's struggling, and they don't seem to have a particular style of play that is, you know, getting in the results that they want at the moment. And I just think if he wants to bring in the players that he wants to, whether that be in January or summer, he has to show the board that, you know, at least what he has currently, he's doing enough to show or earn the right to bring in those players. And I just don't think he's doing that at the moment.
I just think that if he didn't have that glittering career and he didn't start at Monaco, he wouldn't have got anywhere near that job.
I agree. I agree with that. Definitely.
Right.
But he still needs time to turn it around regardless.
Fair enough. Jan, quickly on La Liga, Dembele saved Barcelona with a really good finish, although a lot of credit has to go to Messi with that assist. His pass was superb. I mean, that's a big result for Barcelona given the way they fought against Betis the other week.
Well, yeah, of course, especially against, you know, their rivals for the title this year, Atletico Madrid. I mean, Atletico, I think, will run them close this year. It's a very open league, as you mentioned, this year in Spain. I think ever since we lost the rights on Sky Sports, it's just a crazy league. I mean, it would have been an entertaining league to watch. But it seems like Dembele's been like the saviour in the last few games. You know, he turned the game around against Rayo Vallecano, where they were struggling with 5 minutes to go, and he got an important goal against Atletico. And like you said, you know, losing at home, which was a shock result to Betis before the international break, to get a point like that was crucial, because Atletico would have gone ahead of them, and obviously with confidence winning a big game like that, they could have kicked on. But you know, they didn't lose, and well, they've lost Suarez now as well for 2 weeks. So, you know, apparently 2 to 3 weeks. So we'll see how Barcelona copes without him as well, because they're relying a lot on Messi and Dembele. And Barcelona have been great from their team. And results, they've kind of been huffing and puffing a lot as well. So to get that point, like you said the other day, was a crucial result.
And Andre Silva scored his 8th goal of the season for Sevilla. Another footballer that was at AC Milan and wore that number. Well, he wear the number 9 shirt. It just seems that number 9 shirt is quite heavy for most players. You know, when you had the likes of Van Basten wearing it, you go to Milan and they expect a lot from him. He's come to La Liga and he's absolutely ripping the league to pieces. He's a superb little player, isn't he?
Who's that for me?
He's
done well. He's a proper striker, Andre Silva. You know, he's a proper number 9. He's good in the air. He's good with his feet. Like you said, it didn't work out for him at Milan. But then again, how many strikers can you say has worked out at Milan? So
George Weah.
Who?
George Weah.
Oh, George Weah.
Shevchenko.
Zlatan. But yeah. Definitely not Higuain though, eh? But yeah, he's gone to Sevilla. But Sevilla have always played a brand of football that's always been attacking. So you know, he's suited to that kind of brand of football, and he's done really well. I mean, he's still early stages yet, but if he continues like that, Sevilla will have a really good season.
Absolutely. Right, our third segment is Eurotrash. And I will be bringing you the best of the worst in European football. And my fellow panel will have to decide which is the best of the worst. So the first contender is Bayern Munich again, who blew a 3-1 lead at home to Fortuna Düsseldorf, drawing 3-3. Now, Bayern president Uli Hoeneß said, What happened today is not acceptable. I need to recover from this shock. It's going to be a difficult evening for my wife. I'm not sure if I feel more sorry for the Bayern fans I have to put up with a squad of mercenaries or Uli Hoeneß's wife. Contender number two is Romelu Lukerbfoot, whose attempts at rapping were worse than his first touch. Yeah. His attempts at rapping were worse than his first touch, and it was that bad. Now, the Belgian did his best to outdo former United number 9 Andy Cole by spitting some bars of his own. Truth be told, Red Rom should be behind bars because his lyrics are absolutely criminal. Now, I'm trying to think about which beat he was rhyming to. Ranty, have you got any ideas?
I have no idea, man.
No? Rod, do you know your hip-hop?
Yeah, but I don't know.
Apparently it was a Jay-Z song I ain't heard of. He was trying to recite Jay-Z lyrics. I don't know. It's all a mess.
Okay. Well, I've been dabbling in a bit of editing, and I've got 3 1-minute clips. I don't know if you want to guess. Try this. Maybe it's this one. 1 minute. Do you remember this one? Can you hear this?
No, I can't hear it.
You can't hear it? What now?
Oh, Juicy.
Ah, but if you listen to it, he might have got it. Hang about. Come on.
This shit is wicked on these mean streets. None of my friends speak. We all trying to win. But then again, maybe it's not the best song.
No. Okay, what about this one then?
I'm trying to think what's worse, that or his touch.
Come on. You know this one.
Halfway Crooks.
There you go. Made famous by Eminem, I guess, in 8 Mile.
Yeah, it was Mobb Deep originally, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah. Oh, but anyway.
This shit is wicked on these mean streets. None of my friends speak. We all trying to win. But then again, maybe it's for the best.
No, it's not, is it? It's not that one. Okay, what about this one?
Tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
Yeah, it's this one. It's got to be this one. One minute.
I want you to get that ball under control, mate.
This shit is wicked on these mean streets. None of my friends speak. We all trying to
win. It's this one, isn't it?
Then again, maybe it's for the best though. Because when they're seeing too much, you know they're trying to get you to.
Do you know what I love about this one? Is that he completely messes up his lyrics, then he goes, oh, like that. And that's the sound that every United fan makes. Anyway, right. Contender number three is the FAI, who've decided to borrow Doc Brown and McFly's DeLorean time machine and go back to 2002. I say this because they're in their infinite wisdom, they've reappointed Mick McCarthy as head coach. Now, McCarthy said he's older and wiser than his first stint as head coach. He's half right, he isn't wiser, that's for sure, although I doubt he'll reinstate Roy Keane as his number two. The final contender is Patrice Evra.
the chicken.
Yeah, who thought it was very wise to seduce a raw chicken on Instagram to celebrate Thanksgiving. Potty Paddy has gone from dressing up as a panda to borderline bestiality. Gentlemen, best of the worst? Which one of the four would you rate as the best of the worst?
For me, it has to be Bayern Munich. Then second, McCarthy, and then I'll leave you guys to decide out of...
Yeah?
Can you not hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's Evra, man.
Any reason?
The fact that he tried to seduce a chicken in public was disgusting. Like, it really made me cringe when I was watching it. And the way that he was doing it as well, Evra. Evra wins.
Randy, any reason why he went for the Germans?
Oh, I've just got... Okay, so basically... Oh, so wait, hold on. Am I choosing...
You're choosing the worst one.
Okay, so I got caught up... I got confused when you said the best of the worst. All right, the worst one is probably Evra, yeah. Evra, that is just simply uncalled for. There was no need for it. Yeah, just madness. Got a bit excited. The whole Twitter... He took it too far. Yeah, so for me, Evra...
Rod, do you agree with the lads?
Yeah, definitely, Evra.
Would he have done that if he was still at United and if Ferguson was in charge?
No. And that Memphis divide track was the close second.
I haven't heard that yet. I need to find it.
It's shocking.
What is it with these Dutch footballers that want to be rappers? I know Royston Drenthe did it, but I wouldn't say anything about him because he's an utter nutcase and he'll probably find where I live and, yeah.
Was that the one that Depay had this horrible coat on and he was dancing and rapping?
He always wears horrible coats. We're talking about.
He's tagged one rap video before this one as well. He's always posting it on Instagram and Twitter.
Listen, the only footballer that is rapping that's any decent is Quintero. He does his whole reggaeton thing. But that's going back to River Plate again. We've already done that. But yeah, no, Memphis Depay, I need to check one out. Cheers, Rod. Thanks for reminding me.
Stel, which one's yours, bud?
Do you know the Evra one didn't surprise me because he's crazy, isn't he? He's an utter nutcase.
That's not crazy. That's nasty, isn't it?
Yeah. But I kind of expect that from him, if that makes sense. I have to go with Lukaku because ever since he signed up with Roc Nation, he actually thinks he's a rapper. You know, it's almost as if, like, you know, Jay-Z is playing on the pitch. That's how it seems, you know. And when I see the likes of Usain Bolt trying to play football, I'm thinking, well, Usain Bolt, you know, he's got a first touch of a trampoline. But I'd rather...
Lukaku take it up full time and leave us alone.
Well, will he make enough money?
I don't care.
Who would buy his, you know, I don't know anyone that would, really, even for a laugh. But yeah, anyway, that's it. That's it for the review. Jan, do you want to do the quiz?
I do. Let me just get my list.
There you go. It's quiz time, ladies and gents. So okay. while Jan gets his list, I'm going to remind you guys of the rules. Randy, you haven't played before, but I'll tell you what's happened. Jan's picked 3 games from a specific season. He gives us the results, and we just need to guess the goal scorers. That's it.
Okay, so we just have to guess the goal scorers. Yeah?
Exactly. Yep. We'll do it in turns so that we don't be calling out because obviously we're against each other. So, Jan, fire away, my friend.
Okay. So, the 3 games that I've chosen are from the 2001-2002 season.
Yep.
And they are Southampton 3, Newcastle 1.
Okay.
Manchester United 4, Sunderland 1. Blackburn Rovers 2, Arsenal 3.
Ooh. Wow, okay. Does anyone want to go first with that one?
Oh, mate. I'll go last.
Go on then, what was it? Go on, what was it?
Southampton 3, Newcastle 1. United. All right, we'll start with that one. Southampton 3, Newcastle 1.
Matt Le Tissier. 2. And I'll go with 2001. I'll go with a James Beattie.
And for Newcastle?
Castle Shearer.
Okay. Still?
Oh, blimey. Newcastle. Yeah, I'm going to go with Shearer.
Okay.
I'm going to go with for Southampton. Who played for Southampton back in those days? I can't remember. They weren't at the Dell then, were they? Were they at the Dell?
2001. Yeah, they were.
They were at the Dell. So I'm going to go 2 for Le Tissier because he always scored against Newcastle. I'll say 2 for Le Tissier.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go... crying out loud. Who played in that team? Stuart Ripley.
Okay. Renton.
All right, Newcastle, I'm just going to play it safe and say Shearer.
Okay.
Southampton, I'll go Letizia Brace and Kevin Davis, or was that? I think I'm way off, you know.
Okay, so is that your answers?
Yeah, that's my answer.
All right, I'm going to put you guys out of your misery. I'm going to do it one by one. Scorer for Newcastle, Alan Shearer. For Southampton, the little Latvian Pahas. James Beattie, and one that you probably would have never got, Paul Telfer.
Wow.
See, that was a good one, innit? I'm quite proud of myself. All right. Second game. United 4 when they were half decent. Sunderland 1.
They were half decent. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Who's going to go? Rancy, I'm going to start with you now. You go first.
2001, 2002, yeah?
Yep.
I'm going to go Scholes, Paul Scholes.
Yep.
I'm going to say... would it have been up top then? Oh, my gosh. I'm going to say Paul Scholes, Beckham, David yep. Beckham. And a brace for 2001, 2002. Andy Cole.
Okay, and for Sunderland?
For Sunderland, 2001. Mate. Kevin Phillips?
Okay. Stel?
I was at that one, I remember it.
Here we go.
All right, Stel, you're not going to be in this one then.
Okay.
Rod?
Got to be Rudy van Nistelrooy if it's 2001-2002. It's got to be Dwight York as well. He's got to be there about. And we'll go with a defender. We'll go with Rio Ferdinand there then. No, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't at that time.
No, he wasn't, no. Go with Paul Scholes.
No, and for Sunderland?
Kevin Phillips.
All right, Stel, do you want to tell the scorers?
Ruud got two. Beckham scored a free kick. Phil Neville scored, and Kevin Phillips.
No, I've got Ollie Solskjaer.
Okay.
Beckham two and Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Okay.
And for Sunderland was Kevin Phillips.
Are you sure?
That's what it said.
Season 2001-2002?
Yeah.
Okay, well, fair enough.
Yeah, no, York was playing for Blackburn then, wasn't he?
Because that game we had...
Andy Cole was playing for City or Fulham.
Yeah.
I remember that one because...
Oh, sorry, yeah, Cole was playing for...
No, I think York was still there.
I remember that one because Forlan came on, people were laughing.
Well, of course they were laughing, it was Forlan.
No, people around me were laughing in the crowd. we had Neville and Blanc at centre-backs that day.
Gary Neville, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I'll forward you the score, whatever, or you can check it, but that's what I got anyway.
You said 2001-2002?
Yep.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Right, well, let's do the last game.
Okay, Blackburn 2, Arsenal 3. I'll start with Rod.
Blackburn 2, Arsenal 3, Blackburn 2, 2001, Chris Sutton's still there, no.
Is that a league game, Jan?
Yeah.
Who is the other team?
Arsenal
2001. I'll go with Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, and go with Ray Parlour.
Okay, and for Blackburn?
Blackburn, Two Guy and Santa Cruz.
Ooh, cool. Okay. Stel?
Oh, Christ. I'm going to go Two Guy. I'm going to go Andy Cole. Yeah, Andy Cole 2. No, hang on. Blackburn lost 3-2, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah, I go Two Guy and Andy Cole.
Two. Okay.
Arsenal. Bergkamp, Henry and Pires.
Bergkamp, Henry, Pires. Okay. Ranty?
Henry Brace, Lundberg, Andy Cole, and don't want to say two guy. I probably feel like I have to say two guy now.
All right, Ranty, you're new and I like you. Two guy didn't score. Say somebody else.
All right.
Can I change mine?
What year did Pedersen... Was Pedersen there?
He was.
I'm going to say Pedersen.
Can I change my goal scorers?
No.
Yeah.
Can I swap two guy for Mark Hughes?
Somebody's looking in Google.
All right, I'm going to tell you the scorers. For Arsenal, Dennis Bergkamp got two. And Thierry Henry got the other one. Now for Blackburn, Craig Hignett. Damien Duff.
Damien Duff, of course.
Wow, that was before he joined Chelsea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done, Jan. Very good.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Well, I think you're going to be the official quiz master from now on.
They're definitely getting better.
Yeah.
All right.
Are you not praising me? Are you not all right?
Well, you're despondent after the City game. You're damn right, destroyed at the moment. So we've got to be nice to you, I guess.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Well, Rantley, thank you ever so much for coming on the show, mate. Before I let you go, would you like to remind our listeners of your Twitter handle and how we can get in contact with you and watch your shows?
Yeah, sure. So our Twitter handle is @footy_says. You can follow us on Instagram, FS Uncut. That's FS then UNCUT. We also have a YouTube account which you can subscribe to, and we also have a Facebook account. So yeah, we look forward to getting more followers and interacting with you guys.
Superb. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Rod, I hope you enjoy your Scalextric set.
Yeah, great.
Oh, come on, you never had a Scalextric set?
Yeah, about 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest toys ever created. Come on now. Anyway, what's your Twitter handle, my friend?
Rod James Giggs.
And Jan?
Yannick is J.
@IHateLukaku. Great stuff.
And VAR.
And VAR, yes. Well, you got it next season. You got both next season, got it.
Oh, no. Right. If things are bad now, wait until next season.
Oh, blimey. Yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening. We're on Twitter @ShootTheFence. We have a Facebook group page. We've got our show on Spotify, on Stitcher, on TuneIn Radio, also the FNX
Network. Can I say one thing before we end?
Thank you for interrupting me.
That's all right. I was going to wish you a happy belated birthday, my friend.
Go away. Just go away. You're a week late. Go away.
Well, we didn't do the show last week.
Yeah, exactly, because it's International Week. I was ill last week on my birthday. You know what? The one thing I asked for on my birthday was peace and quiet, and I got it because I was in bed, ill. So, yeah, be careful what you wish for and all that nonsense. Well, yeah, so where was I? Yes, and we're also going to be on the Pitch DMM app. So thanks guys for all your support. We're finally getting somewhere, and that's it. So until next time, take care.